Thank you all.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Maloney.
So what I call Tony Clear Wood.
Sincerely and truthfully declare and affirm that the evidence you are about to give to the court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Afternoon, Ms. Wood.
Good afternoon.
You confirm your full name is Tanya Clear Wood?
I do.
And you are a senior policy advisor for Taupo District Council?
Yes, I am.
And that you have prepared a statement of evidence in this proceeding dated the 28th of July 2023?
Yes.
And you confirm the content of that statement is true and correct?
It is.
Thank you. Ms. Wood, you will have heard the exchange regarding the level and extent of engagement between territorial authorities and Mata Whenua and what it means in the context of Three Waters infrastructure provision and strategy, and also in the context of applications for point source discharges. From the Taupo District Council perspective, can you advise the court on those sort of levels and layers of engagement and structures that are in place?
Absolutely. So engagement with our iwi partners is very important. We had Te Whare Toa Māori Trust Board, Turangi Tukua and Te Aroa River Iwi Trust helped co-design our 2015 infrastructure strategy. We have joint management agreements with Rarotonga, Te Whare Toa Māori Trust Board, although that applies to the Lake Taupo catchment, which is outside of the PC1 catchment, and also Te Aroa River Iwi Trust. We also have a Mana Whakahono agreement with Turangi Tukua, and again, while that's outside of the Pantage 1 catchment, we are currently renewing our consent for our Turangi wastewater treatment plant, which we are co-designing with Turangi Tukua.
Thank you. If you could just remain there and answer any questions that you please. Thank you very much for your evidence. The absence of any questions really just shows how clear and direct it was.
Thank you, sir.
Very excellent. Thank you, sir. I now call Paul Stanley Ryan.
Truthfully declare and affirm that the evidence you are about to give to this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Thank you. Afternoon, Mr. Ryan. You confirm your full name is Paul Stanley Ryan?
Yes.
And that you are a senior planner with Hamilton City Council?
No, I'm a principal planner.
Principal planner, my apologies. And that you have prepared a statement of evidence in this proceeding dated the 28th of July 2023?
Yes.
And that it is true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Just remain there and answer any questions that are put to you, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ryan. Now, I just have some questions for you, centred around paragraph 27 and onwards in your evidence in chief. So if you have that with you, it might be useful. So in paragraph 27, you acknowledge there that a mixing zone may be inappropriate in some locations because of uses or cultural values of that stretch of waterway. Now, you're not saying there that, physically speaking, contaminants don't need time to mix with the receiving environment. You're saying there there might be certain circumstances where actually, even within that mixing zone, there are cultural effects that mean it's inappropriate to discharge in that location. Is that
correct?
Yes. And then in the parts that follow, paraphrasing, I understand you're essentially saying that if an activity that includes an area where there's mixing would mean that the activity would have unacceptable cultural effects, then it might not actually be the BPO and other options would need to be considered. Is that a reasonable paraphrase?
No, I don't think that's what I'm saying. Which paragraph are you referring, drawing that conclusion from?
Paragraph 32, you say if a proposed mixing zone were deemed inappropriate, other options for discharging the contaminants would need to be considered.
Yes.
So, are you saying there in paragraph 32, though, that a mixing zone might be inappropriate, but that the BPO would still be to have a discharge with that mixing zone, or is that where you go in the next paragraph?
I think the next paragraph.
Yes.
So I'm saying 33, following this analysis, the proposed mixing zone may still be the best practicable option despite being deemed inappropriate because of the financial implications or the effects of the environment on the environment of the alternative ways of disposing of the contaminants.
Yes, and then in 34 you say in such a case the overall benefits accruing from that option would be deemed to outweigh the adverse effects of the mixing zone, including those that make it inappropriate.
Yes.
And in terms of this question of mixing zones and appropriateness, they may well, both those two, the considerations of reasonableness in terms of a mixing zone and appropriateness of an activity might cover some of the same ground. Is that fair? Would that be fair?
Ask the question again, please.
Well, actually, let's step back from that and approach it in this way. It's important to consider whether effects within a mixing zone are acceptable. Would you agree with that?
It's an appropriate consideration, yes.
Yes. And that's part of a consideration of whether a proposal, including the immediate effects on discharging into a water body, is appropriate.
It's in my view, it's appropriate when you're considering a discharge to consider whether the effects are
Yes, and so if reasonable mixing was considered first, one might go through a process and say, in relation to this discharge, here is the length of receiving environment waterway over which reasonable mixing would be deemed to occur. That question, and perhaps the answer that that's reasonable mixing, doesn't in and of itself prejudge the overall decision on the consent application, does it? Despite the fact that it includes the word reasonable.
No. If what I have said in my evidence is that you might, with these big infrastructure wastewater treatment plants and that, we're faced with challenging technical issues and financial issues. So sometimes it's going to be very hard to satisfy everybody and provide, you know, an outcome that everybody would be very happy with. So what I've said in this piece of evidence here is that there may be, because of the cultural uses or other uses that are made of the stretch of river, that on the surface of it you'd consider it's inappropriate to be discharging here. But when you look at all the other options that you might have, you might have limited practicable options and really have no option but to discharge at that particular place.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you. Mr. Cassidy. Thank you, Mr. Malone.
No, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. McKinnon.
Thank you, sir.
You, Ms. Omni.
No, thank you, sir.
Mr. Tumai.
No, thank you, sir.
Re-examination. Questions? Any questions? No. Thank you very much for your evidence, Mr. Ryan. Thank you.
Sir, I now call Jenna Sweetman.
So you solemnly, sincerely, and truthfully declare and affirm that the evidence you're about to give for this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Sweetman. You confirm your full name is Gina Marie Sweetman?
Yes, it is.
And you're a consultant planner, and you have prepared a statement of evidence in this proceeding dated the 28th of July, 2023. And you confirm the content of that statement is true and correct to the best of your knowledge. And you've also prepared rebuttal evidence dated the 11th of August, 2023. And you confirm that evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge. Thank you. You can just remain there and answer any questions that are put to you, please.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Ms. Sweetman. I have some questions for you that centre around the point source discharges joint witness statement. Have you got that in front of you there?
Yes, I do.
That's under question 3 relating to policy 12. And when we go through the table of matters of disagreement, the first row there, there's a group of four planners who support the inclusion of the blue words at the end of policy 12A, talking about reasonable mixing being dealt with at that point in the policy. And then over the page, or over, yes, over the page, it's got a row there where your GS, I'm going to take it.
Yes, that's me.
So you've said in there, either delete the word appropriate, and I think the or comes two lines down, where we see a group of five planners there who prefer to have some words, if they exist at all, in the earlier part of policy 12A. So that's your alternative that you support if there's a reference to reasonable mixing in this policy.
My preference is either any appropriate is removed from Mr. Trevithick's proposed wording, or alternatively that wording, including any reasonable mixing, is inserted before it represents.
Thank you. And essentially what I'm wanting to understand is, from your perspective, what's the key difference between having the words at the end in the form that PM, GW, SH and RM support, and having them further up in the wording as you and four others support? Can you describe that in your words, what the significance of the shift in location is?
The significance of the shift in location is to ensure that there is some difference in assessment undertaken between determining what is the best practical option and what is reasonable mixing zone as well. In my mind, they would generally be considered reasonably alongside each other. However, that's why I'm not necessarily either way in terms of whether that wording is located.
So you don't have a strong preference about where it's located if it's in there?
No, I do not.
And that's because, in your view, it's a reasonable thing to consider as part of the assessment of the BPO? Did I hear you right on that?
As part of the BPO and part of the discharge as a whole.
Yes. And so consideration, you'd agree then that consideration of things like cultural effects is important when considering the BPO and can be an important factor in determining whether it's appropriate to have a discharge that has an area within the receiving environment that has a higher level of adverse effects.
I certainly believe and consider that cultural effects would be considered in terms of both the best practical option and in terms of a reasonable mixing zone assessed in accordance with policy 3.2.3.8.
Sorry, can I just ask what do you mean by that would be taken into consideration? Because, for example, if an area contains a whitened topic, what do you suggest would occur in that situation? That's the receiving zone.
I would consider that whoever is assessing the application, they are required under policy 3.2.38 to consider all effects. They're also obviously required under section 104.1A of the Resource Management Act itself to consider all effects as well, which would encapsulate cultural effects.
So if that person doesn't have any background in cultural matters, how do you say they're going to give effect or consider those effects for matters from our if they don't have any background?
I would hope, sir, in this day and age, that whoever is the decision maker on the particular application would have that expertise and understanding that cultural effects needs to be appropriately considered. But I do take your point. I have been looking through the regional plan myself, sir, to see how cultural effects are addressed. And certainly in terms of discharges, which we're considering at the moment, there is policy 6, so 3.5.6, Tangata Whenua Uses and Values, which does, if you'd like me to read it out, sir, or
I can refer it to you. I know what the words say, but the words, giving effect to the words, comes down to the person giving effect to the words. And unless, in my view,
you have a background in matters of Māori or in cultural matters, then the ability to give effect to those words is not as effective.
I can talk to you of my experience as a decision maker. That's certainly what I see, is a lot more consideration and people understanding the need and the requirement in terms of cultural effects.
Yeah, what you're talking about is obligation. Would that be fair?
Well, part obligation, but also increasing understanding and awareness of the importance of addressing cultural effects as well.
Thank you.
In the context of Policy 12A, if the words are to be retained and moved, the reference to reasonable mixing is to be retained and moved up to the location that you would prefer between those two location options, would it be correct to say that one possible outcome of consideration of a reasonable mixing zone might be that there is a patch, maybe a 100 metre stretch of a water body over which it's reasonable to say that mixing will occur, and after that the water is reasonably well mixed, but that despite that, because of matters such as cultural effects on a particular, that on that reasonable mixing zone, the BPO is not actually achieved, or that the activity is perhaps otherwise inappropriate. Would that be one possibility under this policy in the way that you would prefer it to be worded?
It may well be.
And that's an assessment that would need to be made at the time.
I believe that would be an assessment that would need to be made on a case-by-case basis, which would take into account all of the relevant policies and the objectives in the plan.
Thank you, Ms. Whitman. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Ms. Chappell. Thank you. Mr. Cassidy. No, thank you, Mr. Malone.
No, Your Honour.
Ms.
Carmen. No, Your Honour.
Is on.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Sweetman. Now, the concept of reasonable mix zone is also covered in Policy 13, sub 4J, which talks about the application of reasonable mixing in accordance with, assessed in accordance with Policy 3.2.3.8. Is there actually a need to include that concept in Policy 12A as well, and wouldn't it be better just to delete the additions and go back to the first instance decision of Policy 12A? Would that be an option?
May I just clarify that you mean that there wouldn't be any reference to reasonable mixing in Policy 12?
Not in Policy 12A, that's correct. It would be in Policy 13.
Yes, I have considered that. And again, going just back to my previous answer to Mr. Conway, in terms of any application would be assessed on a case-by-case basis, taking into account all relevant policies and objectives in the plan. And Policy 3.2.3.8 exists, and therefore is relevant. The reason I have supported and do support its inclusion in Policy 12A is to make it clear that it is a relevant consideration.
All right, thank you. Now, just moving to the second topic I have. Are you familiar with the principles for offsetting and compensation?
In which particular document are you referring to?
Have you managed to read the evidence of Dr. Ida Corkery?
No, I have not.
Alright.
because we know that the principles of offsetting and compensation are now set out in Appendices 6 and 7 of the NPSFM, but her evidence is that they are based on the Business and Biodiversity Offsets Program and were established in 2012. So they are well-established principles. But you're possibly not familiar with how long they've been around.
No, I'm not.
Right, thank you. Can I take you, please, to paragraph 23 and 24 of your evidence? And sorry, it's your rebuttal evidence.
Yes, I do.
So, Fish and Game is seeking that the principle of additionality be included, and you've stated some concerns there about, and I'll read it out, for all discharges the measure demonstrably exceeds the benefits already required by Chapter 3.11, and you've stated in your paragraph 24 that you weren't quite sure what that was meaning. And you would have heard my questions to Dr. Mitchell where I explained that Chapter 3.11 already requires standards such as setbacks and fencing, and so that any offset would need to exceed those baseline requirements, if you like. So with that understanding, would you have a problem with including the principle of additionality in Policy 12?
I would need to hear and consider the objectives of Plan Change 1 to see if they provided for such additionality before I was able to answer that, and I haven't had the opportunity to look at those.
That's fine. Just finally, do you have a view on whether it's appropriate to include principles in a regional plan such as this that are bespoke offsetting and compensation principles, and as Mr. Trebelko outlined, aren't entirely consistent or aren't intended to give effect to higher level policy document principles?
It would depend in which way you were proposing that those principles would be added into Plan Change 1.
But you shouldn't use terms such as offsetting and compensation in a way that differs from national policy, should you?
It would be a matter of timing in terms of which came first, in terms of Plan Change 1 and the latest version of the National Policy Statement on Fresh Water Management, in terms of whether those offsetting and compensation principles were relevant and could be been considered to have been anticipated by Plan Change 1 and as notified and as it went through the system. So I could say nothing for evaluation of the NPSFM and comparing it to Plan Change 1 as notified.
Thank you, Ms. Whitman. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you.
Any re-examination? Thank you, sir. That completes the evidence for the territorial authorities other than much reasonable like that.
Well, yes, I'm just going to check. Mr. Cassidy, in terms of the submissions that Mr. Green has filed for Matamata-Piaka, that's essentially a submission in support. Do you wish to address anything in relation to that?
Nothing further, sir.
No, thank you very much. Now, you've got a witness who's only available today, haven't you, Mr. Malone?
I have indeed, and I was advised late this afternoon that he needs to leave by 4:45, so Mr. Muldowney and I have a backup plan ready to go in case we do get. So I wonder whether I could just call Mr.
Malone
and have him sworn.
Yes.
I have canvassed with my own friends, and I know that none of them have any questions for him.
Well, let's see if we can get him where he needs to be after he's been here.
Do you solemnly, sincerely, and truthfully declare and affirm that the evidence you're about to give to this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Your full name, David Stanley Norman.
Yes, it is.
And are you the chief economist at GHD for Australia or New Zealand?
I am.
Did you prepare a statement of evidence in these proceedings dated July 2023?
I did.
Do you confirm that that statement is true and correct?
I do.
Do you have any changes to it?
No, I do not.
Please answer any questions that my friends in the court have.
I might just do a global inquiry if what Mr. Malone tells me is true. Is there any party, any counsel for any party wishes to ask Mr. Norman any questions? No? Thank you. There are any questions? Mr. Norman, you've given us an economic analysis of the situation that Waipa finds itself in and the constraints that are around it. Some of those, it may be that a public body such as the Territorial Authority could have alternative sources of funding that might be provided by, say, central government in relation to certain projects, might be.
That's quite possible. Could I just clarify one element, which is my focus was affordability, so not
yes.
An economic assessment per se, no. How you're going to put some costs, but yes, affordability. So in terms of the options, there are limited options available. Those have to be decided on an ad hoc, one-by-one basis. We know that New Zealand, across the country, faces huge challenges in terms of water quality, so there is a long queue to get into if you want to try and access money from the central government.
Oh, I'm not suggesting there is actually any available. I suppose it's really just the recognition that in terms of public finance, sometimes there are sources of funding available which are not available privately.
That's true. The challenge is that taxpayers and ratepayers are the same people, or water
yeah.
entity customers. In terms of the actual ability of Waipa, by way of example, really, to meet the challenge of far more expensive options to treat water, you constantly bump up against your debt to revenue ratio. So many councils are challenged with that. And so we've also had successive governments, national and the Labour-led government, looking at different funding tools they might be able to unlock. That's been incredibly challenging, without going into too much technical detail. Trying to keep that extra debt off a council's balance sheet is immensely challenging.
Yes. Is there anything arising out of my question?
No.
Thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you.
And your excuse. Thank you, Mr. Mullen. Now, shall we go to your legal submissions?
We shall, Your Honour. I'm going to start at section 2 on page 5.
Yes.
I do not, by any means, intend to read these out. The position is very similar to that. And also in relation to objective three with OG. So if you start at 2.1 and 2.2, and I'm just setting out there the two different wordings and highlighting, an issue very appropriate. You've heard about that multiple times today. So I want to address that at 2.4, adopting Mr. Muldowney's submissions, and primarily that is in relation to the uncertainty arising from the use of the word appropriate in that location, or even appropriate at all. Moving on to 2.13, there's an issue being raised, and you will have noticed that my friend was only for Fish and Game has been cross-examining in relation to loads, concentration, timing, etc. Waipa District Council's view of it is that those matters are adequately addressed by policy 3238 in any event. And I'd also pick up on what Mr. Wilco said earlier on today, and what Dr. Mitchell both said and made quite clear, that the Ture Whaimana, in terms of Objective 1 and 2, is primarily about, at this stage of it, reducing the load of contaminants and everybody making their contribution towards that. In that context, it would be my submission that you don't need to concern yourself with the things that Ms. Maher is raising, but in addition to which, they are already covered by the other planning provisions that apply in the regional plan. And also keeping in mind that a municipal discharge from a wastewater treatment plant would be a discretionary activity, so then everything needs to be considered in the event. Objective 3 there, Your Honour, and this is on starting with section 3 on page 8, and you'll see there I've set out the wording that's supported by Mr. Hamilton at paragraph 3.2 there, and the wording that's supported at paragraph 3.3 by Dr. Mitchell, and you can ask Ms. Chappell some questions regarding that earlier on today. Waipa District Council doesn't mind whether it's one wording or the other, and the primary reason for seeking that amendment is simply to align with the purpose of the Resource Management Act, and also some other plan provisions that are in different parts of the Waikato Regional Plan that relate to enabling people. And those are all addressed in Mr. Hamilton's evidence, so to the extent that you have any questions in relation to that, he will be much better at answering them than I am, believe me.
Well,
sorry, I didn't catch that, Your Honour.
Well dodged.
Wasn't my intention, though.
No.
And then, really, the final thing I'd like to point out, and this is just a 3.9 and 3.10, pointing out, plan change and to assist the regional council carry out its functions in order to achieve the purpose of the Act, including, obviously, the definition in section 5.2. And then I've just cited some provisions from the Puke Coal case, because I wasn't sure to what extent any of my friends were going to address the consistency of the vision and strategy with the purpose of the Resource Management Act. And as far as I am aware, Puke Coal decision is the only one that's actually considered that. So I just put that in there, really, so you can see that. In addition to which, I didn't highlight the parts of the Puke Coal decision that relate to betterment and stepwise change in terms of section 5.2. I think that has to be taken as a given. I don't see how anybody could possibly argue against that.
Well, we have in the other part of the hearings, PC1, we have had a number of submissions about this section of the Puke Coal decision. So, but yes, we understand your point about the reasoning in that decision and its application to both PC1 generally and to the point source discharge issues that arise.
Yes, sure. Certainly didn't want to labour the point, so I'm sure you were well aware of it.
It's always very handy to have it set out, and you've indicated which bits in particular you say are most relevant. Thank you.
And if there are no questions.
No questions, Mr.
Mullen. Okay, I'll call Mr. Martin Maltby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
clear why I might have got that there is the ability to give the sport, shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Okay.
Is your full name Martin Philip Mould?
Yes.
And are you the Water Services Manager for the Waipa District Council?
Yes.
And have you prepared a statement of evidence in these proceedings dated July 2022?
Yes.
Do you confirm that that is true and correct?
Yes.
In the course, you've been sitting here throughout the hearing, Mr. Mould. In the course of that, there have been few questions from the bench that I don't think are necessarily directly addressed in your evidence. But one of them has been engagement with Funded Phenomena. Another one has been from Commissioner Hodges in relation to the best practice of auction and separating that regional music. Do you have anything you want to add to your evidence in relation to either or both of those matters?
Oh, sorry, one. Yeah. So, we've just obtained our 35-year resource consent for the discharge of the Cambridge Wastewater Treatment Plant. We've managed to do that without a need for a hearing. And the rationale behind that is for the last 8 years we've worked with local iwi and the River Iwi in co-governance and co-management of the whole process of obtaining the consent. We've written the resource consent conditions together, including the whole section of Matarangi Māori, how we're going to monitor that in the future, and had full support in writing from iwi for our consent application. So we've been on a long journey, and we do that willingly for the best outcome of the river.
So have you got formalised co-governance arrangements with Papua New Guinea?
Yes, we've got as most local councils do in the Waikato region, we've got joint management agreements across the board, looking after the river, and we've got formal co-governance for the Cambridge Wastewater Treatment Plant project, mm-hmm. including we're just going into construction, and on the project control group, we've got two members from the Kaitaki group on the project control group to continue that relationship right through to the build and then ongoing in the future.
I haven't seen that, so just a couple of questions if I may about
that. Sure.
Is membership on those bodies equal or how is it structured?
So the Kaitaki group is 70% iwi and 30% council.
Okay.
Members. Yeah.
Yep. That's the co-management or co-governance?
That's the co-management and co-governance, co-management in one wrapped together.
Right.
And that's 70% iwi and 30% council.
And in terms of decisions of that body, is it made by consensus or is it made by majority? How are decisions made?
By consensus. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Please
answer any questions that I might have, Mr. Dean.
No, thank you, sir. Thank you. Let's check. Thank you. Mr. Muldown.
No, thank you, sir.
Mr. Cassidy.
No, thank you, sir.
No. And Ms. Garden.
No, thank you, sir.
No, thank you, sir.
Ms. Ong.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm the lawyer for Fish and Game. In relation to the Waipa District Council's application for the Cambridge wastewater treatment plant, Fish and Game made a submission and then entered into an MOU with the Waipa District Council, didn't it?
It did, yes.
I don't know if you're aware that Mr. Clee from Fish and Game's exchanged some evidence in these proceedings, and at paragraph 13.5, he talks about the Cambridge plant discharges, and that a short-term or six-year consent was granted to enable the applicant to investigate longer-term solutions. And in addition to an annual fund of $50,000 for environmental enhancements, conditions require the consent holder to undertake nutrient offsetting investigations. And that was a pilot study focused on determining the efficacy of offsetting nutrients in the Waikato River. And can you just explain what's happened with that with those investigations, please?
So I'm not fully informed. I think from recollection that we've tried to engage many different people on them and not been successful in finding a partner to complete those studies yet.
And so is Mr. Flea's understanding correct? He says there's been a significant effort to implement the project, but that's failed to occur, and it's now been suggested that $500,000 funding dedicated to that project should instead be used on catchment-based environmental compensation projects.
Correct.
Can you comment on whether the case illustrates that there are difficulties with theoretical offsetting proposals when they're put forward at the consenting level?
No, I couldn't answer that.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
No questions, thank you.
Any re-examinations?
No, Your Honour.
Good afternoon, Mr. Miles. You mentioned the Te Awamutu wastewater treatment plant and the fact that it had biological nitrogen and phosphorus removal from 2000, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
And what sort of treatment plant was that? Was it advanced nutrient removal or a relatively simple process?
It was, the original one was a relatively simple process, yes.
Okay, and you mentioned a new consent or a new five-year part of a consent. Was that Te Awamutu or somewhere else?
Short-term consent was for Cambridge.
Yeah.
So we obtained a six-year consent for Cambridge to enable us to get the consent for the long-term future build, which we've now got. Yeah.
Okay. And is it your general intent to try and achieve the average removal required across the whole catchment for nitrogen and phosphorus?
Yes. Yes, Te Awamutu's got an upgrade at the year 8 of the LTP, so 4 more years, and there's another upgrade of Te Awamutu to bring that up to a similar standard.
And when you say similar standard, that's, from memory, it's 37% nitrogen removal required across the catchment. Is that what you're intending to increase the removal of Te Awamutu by?
To similar to the Cambridge one, and that will probably deliver on the 37%, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Your Honour.
Anything arising? Thank you very much for your evidence, Mr. Muller. Yes, you.
Your Honour, the next witness I call Ian Holland. I just have to actually get a copy of his evidence. I've had it in my folder and it's not there, but I know someone's got one.
You have seen it before.
I think I might have even removed it.
By mighty God, that they that are about to give this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
What's your full name, Ian Ho?
My full name is Ian Tongwan Ho, but I go by the name Ian Ho most of the time.
And are you employed as the TA at GHC as engineering lead treatment processes?
That's correct.
And have you prepared a statement of evidence in these proceedings dated July 2023?
Yes.
Do you confirm that it's true and correct?
Yep.
Do you have anything to add to it?
No, I don't.
Can you please answer any questions that the court may have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hold down.
Ready?
Cassidy.
Ready to start.
Thomas Garvin.
No, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. No, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Ho. Just a point of clarification, please. with the next upgrade of, or with the upgrade of the Cambridge treatment plant, what level of treatment are you able to go in the current stage?
So you're talking about the one, excuse me, you're talking about the plant currently being finished the design, it's going to be improved, the consent is already granted, you're talking about 35 years from now.
Well, 35 years would be fine, but what is your treatment plant design standard that you're aiming for with the new upgrade?
So the current, I'm not on the design team for the Cambridge treatment plant upgrade, but the Cambridge plant consent is directly to get nitrogen to 4 as a median, and less phosphorus less than 1.
Okay, and will you be putting in a membrane filter at some stage?
The plant will come with microfiltration, so it only removes the solids, but it's not as high as the reverse osmosis that Ms. Porter alerted to early in her evidence.
No, I wasn't asking about reverse osmosis. Are you putting in a membrane filter?
Yes, there will be a membrane filter in the plant.
And some kind of disinfection device?
I believe there is also a provision of disinfection, but membrane does also remove pathogen as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honour.
Anything arise?
Thank you, Your Honour.
Thank you for your evidence, Mr. Ho. You're excused.
And call Mr. Anthony Kirk.
Solemnly, sincerely, jurously declare and affirm that the evidence you're about to give to the court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Is your full name Anthony Kirk?
Yes, sir.
And are you employed by THC as a technical director?
Yes, that's right.
And did you prepare a statement of evidence and a statement of rebuttal evidence in these proceedings dated July 2023?
That's correct.
Do you have any corrections to those? Can you confirm that they are true and correct? Please answer any questions that there may be.
Mr. Tom.
I think so.
Thank you.
Mr. Kess.
Sir.
Ms. Garth.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Newman.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Holman.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Kirk.
Bye.
Have you had an opportunity to read Mr. Clee's evidence submission again?
At least to the end.
And at paragraph 13.9 of his evidence, he refers to technical assessments for two applications lodged by Waipa District Council, one for discharges to DTO and Mooted Wastewater Treatment Plant. And in that, the AEE used the empirical equation developed by Elliot et al. To determine the effects of nutrient loading to the Waikato River downstream at Pumpey, concluding that reduction in nitrogen would offset increases in phosphorus, leading to an overall improvement in water quality. Were you involved in that?
No, I wasn't.
But you'd be familiar with the Elliot paper?
I'm familiar with the process.
Yes. And then conversely, the application for Cambridge concluded that the scientific analysis supports the position that control of phosphorus is more important for limiting algal growth and corresponding water quality implications than control of nitrogen. So were you aware that the two applications reached different conclusions in that respect?
Yes, I was aware.
And Mr. Clee states that if this type of approach were taken through to its natural conclusion, both nitrogen and phosphorus could be increased in the main stem of the Waikato River over time, whilst individual consent holders claim that water quality is being improved.
Yeah, I think that's flawed in its application.
And please explain.
So the, in particular around the Cambridge application, those statements in terms of phosphorus being more important than nitrogen was made because the plant handling targets for that particular river required the reduction of, of phosphorus, but only maintenance of combustion. In terms of that, the Tiaramutu application, you know, that's a, if anything, it's a problem with the reviewer as opposed to how the application is being used. So I don't accept the scientific argument that you can tweak both, you know, and progressively increase those. So.
Okay, so just to clarify, is it your view that we should be aiming at reducing both contaminants, nitrogen and phosphorus?
It depends on whereabouts. So they are both important, obviously, but sometimes one is more important than the other one. So, for instance, in freshwater environments, there is a tendency for phosphorus to be more important in terms of algal growth.
I think what Mr. Clee's saying, though, isn't it, is that they both end up in the same place, and if we have applicants arguing they can increase one but decrease the other, and vice versa in certain applications, it wouldn't be a good outcome for the river?
I think it needs to be considered on a catchment basis. So, for instance, if you have certain sub-catchments have different inputs and different amounts of solutions. So, for instance, in the Te Awamutu case, the sub-catchment there could have issues with phosphorus, but then you could have extra dilution coming in and not have the same problem. In that downstream location. So it's really it's a case by case sort of thing that you need to consider on each part of the river.
So the Tiaramutu application did include increases in total phosphorus?
I'm not sure. I'm not actually familiar with that application in terms of like the quantum. So I knew that there was a contrast after reading his evidence. But yeah, I don't accept that that's the usual form of things.
Thank you. Do you have the joint witness statement freshwater with you?
No, I don't.
Should be in a folder behind you. I think if you look at the folder, dark blue spine, 401.
Yes, 401.0001, so it should be the first tab in that.
Yes, okay.
And then could you go to the bundle referencing is 401.0018. Sorry, 1.7. We started 1.7.
Okay,
yeah. Question 27. Can contaminants be traded off? Are there any risks to this approach in terms of achieving its objectives 1, M2 or PC1? And then there's a reference to Dr. Corcoran's evidence from Chief, the Director General of Conservation. And then if we turn over the page there, the freshwater agreements included number 4, if direct exchange of different nutrients has been proposed, the terms offsetting and compensation should not be used. Number 3, the overall catchment allocation status of each contaminant needs to be considered. Currently, all contaminants are fully or over allocated, and increasing one contaminant would increase over allocation of that contaminant. And then, I believe it was Ms. Holmes who, and this related to policy 5, supported the approach outlined in Policy 5, which contained an ability for what one might call nutrient trading. Is that your understanding?
I can't recall Policy 5, sir.
Alright, because your name is listed there in terms of agreeing with Ms. Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know that Ms. Holmes' evidence is that you could increase nitrogen, for example, if you needed to for additional commercial vegetable production, and you could, I'm not sure if she uses the term compensate or offset, but cater for that by, say, a reduction in E. coli?
I don't think she would have been talking about E. coli because this relates to nutrients.
Right. Okay, well, in terms of nutrient trading per se, do you agree with item 3 there?
So that in terms of nutrient trading, if you can achieve really significant gains against one nutrient for a very small increase of a different nutrient, sometimes that can be a very positive outcome. For instance, where that larger nutrient is more difficult to realise gains elsewhere. So there are examples over in the Darko River, and where, for instance, that has been used. In the Piako.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So there are examples where that has previously been used for wastewater treatment plants, and it, where you can achieve those very marked reductions, in terms of pros and cons, that can still be a positive outcome.
So, do you consider that it's consistent with Te Tiru Whaimana, even if the contaminants end up at the same place, which is ultimately the point of Tuakai Bridge? You still consider that that's acceptable?
Where the overall outcome is actually improvement.
Thank you.
Any re-examination? No. Yes, just a lot of questions, Mr. Kirk. Paragraph 2.5 of your evidence. Do you get that?
I do.
In this paragraph, we're talking about the terminology in policy 3.2.38, correct?
This is 2.5?
Yeah, paragraph 2.5.
Which is talking with regards to the compensatory improvements.
Oh, hang on. This is document 3130255.
Just got a copy of my evidence.
That's your rebuttal evidence.
Sorry, your rebuttal evidence.
Done. Do you have a copy of your rebuttal evidence?
I do.
Yes. Yeah. I apologize.
All right.
This is the right document, huh? All right. So, mm-hmm. Paragraph 2.5. Starts off with a paragraph 7.33 of Ms. Redmaker's evidence. You're on the same page?
I am.
This time? Okay, cool. So here you're talking about the terminology of appropriate reasonable mixing occurring in accordance with policy 3.2.38, correct?
Yes.
So you say here you disagree with the interpretation there and say that the key issue is not whether a zone of reasonable mixing is recognised, but rather what extent the level of effect within the mixing zone is reasonable. So the question for me is, if the mixing zone is in a Mahinakai area for Māori, or in a Wāhi Tapu for Māori, there will be no degree of mixing within that zone that will be reasonable.
Yeah.
So it strikes me that your view here is inconsistent, or
Wait to the question.
Sorry, just getting excited. I think the issue there is it's not the reasonable mixing zone or the actual mixing zone which is the problem, it's the actual discharge. So the actual discharge may be inappropriate at that location.
Yes.
So that's not the reasonable mixing zone.
Is that in another location then?
Well, that's actually the reasonable mixing zone is from the point of discharge downstream.
Yes.
Okay. So the issue in those areas is that a discharge full stop shouldn't be allowed.
Sorry, say that again?
The issue is in those locations, if that is going to be a significant adverse effect, there just shouldn't be a discharge.
So there shouldn't be a discharge in those locations.
That's right.
Okay. Right, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that.
Any questions? Mm-hmm. not sure what questions there may be for the planner, Mr. Hamilton. What are you thinking?
Happy to wrap up now and start with tomorrow morning, Your Honour.
Yes,
or
I mean, I think...
Now, it's entirely up to the public.
Well, I'm just also thinking in terms of we've made good progress today and in terms of where things are at. It does seem to me as though we're likely to be able to conclude tomorrow as planned. Mr. Conway, yes, nodding of heads. Anyone disagree? Then, in the usual course, I wouldn't want to leave a witness hung up on cross-examination. I'm assuming that there are some questions for Mr. Hamilton. Yes. So, on that, yes. But, okay, well, at least two parties appear to have questions for Mr. Hamilton. So I think we might just take it there.
Your Honour, appreciate it.
All right. Any other matters that anyone wishes to raise at this stage? Mr. Conway, yes.
Sir, I was just going to double check on timing for tomorrow because I understand the WRA witnesses are being heard by ABL.
I see that.
Tomorrow, so
yes.
Just sort of double check if that's going to be confirmed.
It's still what we're planning. So 9 o'clock tomorrow for everyone, mm-hmm. At least if you want to hear the evidence of the River Authority's witnesses or ask them questions. Very good. Well, that gets us off to a good start, and then we'll continue. We'll finish with Mr. Hamilton, I think, for the Waipa District Council. One witness begins this. Mr. Minhinnick, you got two.
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you. Now, Fish and Game, two witnesses, or there are more in the bundle?
Yes, sir. Dr. Daniel does actually cover this issue about nutrient trading, but he didn't propose to call him. I proposed to call him in the general deal.
All right. Well, I suppose the only question is, in terms of what's been raised previously, is whether he may be saying something which those parties who are only involved in this hearing wanted to announce. Ms. Chappell, you raised that point earlier. Is there any issue about that for you?
Sir, I don't have any questions for that witness, but I can't speak to my colleagues in that regard.
Well, I'll just double check. Mr. Muldowney,
no questions for that witness, sir.
Ms. Gardner?
No questions
for that witness. All right. Well, it seems as though if there are questions for that witness, those parties who are going to be coming back for the presumption of the main hearing will be able to deal with that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Anything else? No. Very good. Thank you all, everyone. So we'll be back here bright and early tomorrow for the River Authority's witnesses.